Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Snyder, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Thursday, October 24th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our newly redesigned website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Let me tell you, it is chilly here at the campground. Let me tell you, it was very breezy yesterday, and really just the wind, just even though it wasn't cold, that cold regarding the temperature, me and the wife, we were in the car yesterday coming back from karaoke, I believe it was, last night at the clubhouse, and it said 48 on the car, and I'm like, you know, just because this is the first really cool snap, the first cool wave, the first Arctic blast, whatever you want to call it, coming through the northeast Georgia Appalachian Mountains, it just, and we're so used to the summer, it just, I'm sure, seems colder. If we had a day like today in February, it'd probably be like, hey, it's warming up, this is nice. But 48 degrees last night, it got down to probably about 32 overnight, and the wind didn't make it feel any better than that, I can assure you. But I'm... came down here to the clubhouse to broadcast live today because Jen is back home at the RV with the kids, and just a little bit cold to sit under the awning in the shade here with the still slight breeze we've got. But it's very few clouds in the sky. It's a beautiful blue sky. I'm looking at the beautiful mountains, mountain view with the fall colors. It is absolutely gorgeous. I'm actually sitting on the back deck now of the clubhouse. I'll go in here shortly when I bring Richard on because I don't want him to talk so much and talk so loud and bother the others in the clubhouse if that's an issue. But, yeah, even down in Florida, as Christmas Chick's saying, it was in the 50s last night down there, so y'all got a little cool front. In fact, my dad said the whole country is actually very, very cool right now, apparently, from the weather he was looking at on the television. So I guess fall is here, and the weather is letting us know. But it's a beautiful day here in the northeast Georgia Mountains. We've only got a few more days here. We'll be packing up, hooking up the RV and to the SUV and heading out next week. We'll be heading out Wednesday morning. It's going to be a sad time because we really, really love this resort. We've met a lot of wonderful friends, and we hate to leave, but we will be back next year. We've already put the date down at the RV office. But wonderful amenities, just had a great time. It was great to be up here near my dad for 3 months and go out with him once a week and cook ribs on the grill at his place, things like that. So we'll miss that. He got to see a lot of his grandkids, and so that was good. But we're going to head down to a place we dearly really enjoy, and that's Stone Mountain Park. So Caleb can ride the choo-choo train, go up on the sky lift, walk on top of the mountain, all kinds of great things. They've got a kid's what they call the barn with a bunch of activities in it. We're going to do that for about a week, and then we're heading up to Nashville, Tennessee for our big book tour and event up there. There will be a big event on Saturday, November the 9th, there just outside of Nashville near Brentwood at I believe it's the Ed Jones Auditorium at the Agricultural Center there. It seats about 150 folks, and really promoting that hot and heavy up in the Nashville area. 12 stores have bag stuffers and posters in the stores about the event in that area, and the PR firm is going to be blasting it out. Press release to all the media. We'll be up there on Thursday and then before, and then Friday we'll do any kind of in-house and studio interviews, radio interviews, things like that. And then for the big event on Saturday, which will be from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., and actually a book following immediately after that. So the actual workshop will be from 10 to 12, and when we're done with that, we'll have Q&A and then a book signing to follow. So I got some called to order some books from my publisher yesterday. And y'all remember last year, the last 6 months of last year, it was sold over 18,000 books. It was incredible. My jaw dropped. And so, again, this year I called yesterday and they said, well, we just got 3,000 in, and we only have 300 left. And she said, in fact, the November order that they have coming in is already backordered by 1,200 books. So I'm beside myself. My jaw drops every time I hear numbers like that. It's very humbling. I'm glad it's selling. Yes, I am. It's just the numbers are just baffle me. So thank you all who are purchasing and recommending my book to the new chicken keeper out there. I do appreciate that as it continues to sell like hotcakes out there. So thank you very much. But we are heading up to Nashville, looking forward to that. And after the Nashville event, we'll go back to the homestead for 2 days, unpack, repack, and then we're going to head to Florida probably for about 4 months. So again, pretty much living the full-time RV lifestyle, meeting lots of people, spreading the chicken love, and continuing our book tour with Tractor Supply. We are looking forward to signing another contract with Tractor Supply next year. It's already in the works, so I'm glad they're happy, glad we're happy, and everything is going well, and the fact that we get to travel with our family. Wouldn't have it any other way. Speaking of numbers, not necessarily regarding the book, but during this radio show, in fact, just moments after this radio show podcast started, I went over to the Chicken Whisperer Facebook page, and I clicked on that, and I was amazed to see, again, very humbling, that we have topped the 75,000 fan mark, Facebook fan, 75,004 as it sits right now, and we've got a tremendous and wonderful following there, so we thank you very much for being a Facebook fan. I do believe, unless you can send me something that says otherwise, just from the tootling around Facebook and typing in different types of pages, I think 75,000 here at the Chicken Whisperer page is more Facebook fans than any other chicken-related Facebook page on the planet. If you have something that shows otherwise, I'd love to send it to me because I don't want to say anything that's not true or is not accurate. So just from my looking around, I don't see any others. So thank you very, very, very much if you're a Facebook fan. If not, you can join us over there, become 75,000 and our 75,005th fan at facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. So gotta love it, and we appreciate you being a fan. Again, it's very, very humbling. Getting that official announcement on our Facebook page a little bit later today. We've had great shows all week this week, very good educational shows. Hope your Chicken Whisperer Spiral Notebook is getting full. But today is going to be no exception. We've got Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, coming on. You can visit them online at backhomemagazine.com. He comes and joins us twice a month, talks about different homesteading topics. And today I had to look this up. And you may be right there with me. Rock flower in the fall garden. Rock flower. So initially I looked it up, and I spelled it wrong because I was just going by memory. And I spelled it flower, like a blooming flower, or a flower like a rose. And there's a rock flower out there, or a flower that's nicknamed the rock flower. But that's not what we're talking about at all. A little bit more research, and of course, ding dong, spelling it the wrong way. I go to spell it the right way, rock flour, like flour you use to make biscuits, rock flour in the fall garden, and guess what? It's a completely different meaning. But very interesting. I'm anxious to hear Richard talk to us about exactly how to utilize this, what exactly it is, and how you know, it's probably billions of years old, as old as the earth, because it looks like it's derived from grinding up stone and rock from the earth to make this rock flour, if you will, like a powder that we can add to our fall garden. So I've got questions about adding it to whenever we pot something in potting mix or in pots or raised beds or around the shrubs or what the benefit is. So I'm definitely looking forward to talking with Richard today and learning more about rock flour, using it in our fall garden, and just very interested in knowing what that's all about. So again, it's about quarter past the hour. I see Richard is in the chat room, so we'll just, what a great segue, head on over there, and let's give him a big Chicken Whisperer welcome. And we'll go ahead and bring Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, on the air. Hey, Richard, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, sure, no problem.
Yeah, and actually just remembering from your channel, like rock flower, type it in, rock flower, and I was really going to talk about plant. Okay, this could make sense, I guess. Then I went back and looked officially because there wasn't a lot about rock flour. And then I said, oh, I spelt it wrong. That would help, ding dong. And then I did a little research on it, kind of preparing for the show. And it's totally different. It's like a ground up, whether that's done man-made or naturally, and you get this this powder basically made from the flour substance made from stone that's, deteriorated or ground up, and adding it as a soil amendment, I'm guessing, to different soils, whether it be the garden or raised bed or potting plant. So I'm eagerly interested in learning more about this.
Yeah, it was a surprise to me as well. Rock flour is just one name. I mean, other names for it are gravel dust, and rock. I guess rock dust, and there's some commercial products as well. One of them is azomite mineral products, and there's a few others. But let me see. What there's also local names for it, which a lot of the same material is available as under different names as just a byproduct of the cement industry or places where they deal with construction materials. So it may not be as easy to access if you don't know the right either where to look or what to look for as far as a name. But it's not like it's uncommon. You know, a lot of people would go the commercial route and just look for the products like azomite or another one's called Bricks Blend, and Mountain Rock Dust. I mean, there's just a few product names for it as well. But it's a fairly unusual approach to amending soil, and but it's nothing really new. According to the article we ran in Back Home, this issue, which was written by Pamela Jacobson, who's quite well known among Back Home readers as a contributor in the area of gardening and soil and that kind of thing. She does a lot of articles for us in that area. A lot of this came from studies that were done quite some time ago. I'm trying to find out here what the, when the exact year was, but it was actually the late, in the 1800s, a biochemist in Europe actually wrote a treatise on it called Bread from Stones, which was written in the late 1800s, I believe, and his name was Julius Hensel, and he called it stone meal. But he basically, with his chemical and biological background, he was able to realize that the nutrients and minerals in the stone had the ability to be taken up by the soil, and he basically had written a book at that point, saying that the nutrients that were absorbed by the soil then passed into the food, and how and how that obviously was a benefit to us in the way of nutrition. And in those days, there wasn't a lot. There weren't that many chemists. Chemistry was a growing industry, and there wasn't a lot of research available, and people were just really learning about that. So I'm sure it made a big splash back then. Just a little more biographical background. I'm not quite sure when this gentleman Hensel died, but his further research was taken up in the 1930s in Europe again. But that was a lot of that was done under the umbrella of a chemical fertilizer industry. So they sort of took the information and was sort of replicating, as the chemical industry does, replicate the natural processes and duplicate them synthetically and try to fertilizers, which of course is what was done starting at around that time.
You were talking about there's many different it can be labeled many different things. Different companies are putting it out where you can purchase it. But is it does it all have to come from the same quarry, the same rock, or is one using, say, granite dust, one's using a different type of a dust, and then they're packaging their own type, or does it all have to come from, to be considered that, right, from this particular mineral or stone or area or whatever, or people just going out grinding up any type of stone?
The short answer is yes. That's basically it. Just one way beyond buying the commercial products, which I can talk about a little bit more. I mean, uh-huh. We make sure people know the names. It's basically just gravel dust. And if you would go to a local gravel operation or gravel pit or a quarry or whatever you might call it in your area, what you're looking for is just crushed. Crushed and screened stone, and what the situation is that the stone has minerals, has a broad conglomeration of minerals in it. In fact, one of the commercial products is called azomite because it's an acronym for A to Z minerals. So these are naturally occurring minerals that show up in the rocks and are broken up in the breaking up process and the screening process and whatever. They are broken up and exposed for our use as a soil amendment. So by going to a quarry and looking for crushed and screened stone, you're really looking for the dust and the smallest particles of screened material. And there's, it's sold by the ton. A lot of, like my yard here locally, the least you can buy is a quarter yard of it, which is basically, a scoop from the front end loader of the pile, and you're getting, a partial scoop like that is just about enough for a pickup truck to carry. I mean, it gets, it's heavy, so it's going to cost. Basically, I think that the actual cost of it by tonnage is about $8 a ton. Obviously, in smaller amounts, it's going to be more expensive per unit than a larger amount. But it's just the dust and the small particles that come out of mixed rocks and riverbeds, that kind of thing. Just a conglomeration of rock dust. Part of the problem is that not all rock dust is going to be the same in every part of the country. Part of the country we have, there'll be a lot of granite in there, and in other parts of the country there may be sandstone or whatever it is you may have in your area when they mine a quarry. But that's why looking for something from a riverbed is probably a safer bet, because that'll have a mixture of more broader or widespread availability of the kind of minerals you're looking for. If you don't have a truck, I mean, that's part of the problem is transporting it from a local source to your home. I guess if you talk to the people at the quarry, you may be able to get, just go with a shovel and work out a price for maybe a few garbage cans full of it or whatever will fit in the car or the back of the van or whatever in a container. It may be worthwhile to hire a small dump bed truck or just a friend with a pickup, and you can shovel it out once you get to the house. But it really is just a quarry mine product that ideally would be gotten from the local quarry. I guess that answers your question as far as like where it's coming from and what the mixture is, because really the best thing is getting a source of rock that includes as many minerals as you can, because what happens is that at least the theory is there's a gentleman named John Hammaker who has in the early 80s this fellow Hammaker and and Don Weaver co-authored a book called The Survival of Civilization, which is worth taking a look at on Googling or on Amazon or whatever. And this is this book was really a picking up the based on the early research of Hensel and any further research that was done, and just basically wrapping it all into a modern package. Just Survival of Civilization just was a treatise on the urgent need for us to improve our soils, and not by chemical fertilizers, but by the natural amendments and minerals that occur in rocks, and you know, including you know basalt and some of the other rocks that are that would be harvested in a quarry or river mining operation. Basically, just natural minerals, and what happens is the plants, the rock dust is applied, and once it gets in contact with carbon dioxide and water and the microorganisms in the soil, and the plant roots produce in their growing, they produce organic acids in small quantities. So all this works to break apart or actually take up the minerals in the rock dust that the plants require. And that's the whole beauty of it, is that you're not feeding essentially a pre-prescribed mixture of specific chemicals to the plants. The plants are taking up what they need and adjusting as needed their own requirements. And that's the whole beauty of it, and that's what makes it a more natural process. It's all out there, and they're just taking up what they need. I have not been able to really, not yet anyway, wasn't able to get a copy of Survival of Civilization. It's available. It's not a hard book to find. I have not really looked at it to see what else he has to say about, or what they have to say about rock flour, but basically, in a nutshell, it's just allowing the plants to take up what they require in the rock and mineral compounds you're putting in, as opposed to them relying on what is fed to them chemically in a purchased fertilizer, fed to them chemically in the traditional nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium mix. You know, the NPK mix that you buy, your 10, 30, 10, or whatever it is you buy at the store. So it really is a much more natural process, and it can be as easy. Well, I guess I shouldn't say easy. It can be as difficult as going to the quarry and picking up what you can and amending your soil, or it can be as easy as purchasing one of the commercial based mineral products that are manufactured to contain the kind of rock flour that you. Yeah, that you would want to put on your soil. There's a lot of questioning or a lot of opinion as to how much, what the application might be, and some of this depends on whether you're dealing with a small garden and people are actually using it on a much larger scale, on an acreage scale. I believe that one source I see here, generally the rock dust be spread at a rate of about 3 to 10 tons per acre. So you can make your calculations, but another source says up to 20 tons per acre, which I believe is, from what I've seen, is rather high, but just running in the 3 to 10 tons per acre range, it's about 1.25 pounds per square yard of area, and that would be the smallest. And then the 10 tons per acre application is actually about 4 pounds per square yard of area. So you're looking at really not a whole lot on a small scale, not a whole lot of not an incredibly whole lot of material. So it really this a lot of this is we're probably getting a little later in the season, really not awfully. I sort of moved up this discussion as early as I as I could for this show, because people could still access this stuff and do it before the ground gets frozen in some places. But this is a good fall application, you know, a good fall in the garden to get to bed kind of process after you've done your harvest. And after, some people till in the you know, the residue. Some people do applications of leaves and mulch and then till it in, or just spread it and let it work in the soil. This is a good time of the year to be doing the rock flour or gravel dust application, you know, just about this time of year, because it does take, this is not a process. Anything you do, if you were to go out tomorrow and source a load of this rock dust or rock flour and over this weekend put it into your little, you know, your little quarter acre garden or whatever, it would be about a year before the effects would even be able to be noticed or even measured. It takes a while because it is a natural process. But again, I don't know if putting it in the spring would be advisable. I do know everything I've seen, you know, so far is, you know, talks about mainly fall applications, but it would be a good time of year to do it, you know, either between the end of your harvest and before the ground actually starts to get, you know, get hard, or before your frost starts setting in. I mean, I know here we're we had our first frost in many parts of my area here last night, and I know we're due for another couple of days of evening lows down into the 20s.
Yeah.
So it's all, you know, I don't, you know, a lot of people who in the northern climates already have had that, and I'm sure further south we have yet to see it in the flat part, but I'm in the mountains now, so we're looking at 27 degrees tonight, I think. A couple of those nights, and you've got soil that's really starting to harden up. So you know, now's the time of year to get cracking, you know, get this stuff in the ground. If you spent some time researching it and had a local garden shop or something that had had these mineral products available, you could probably do this, and actually get it done. You know, the dust itself is inert, but it really requires the presence of soil and water and the plant's interaction with the plant roots to really start working. So that's what I say. It's one of those things that's really really sort of inert and really not particularly active until it really starts to get applied properly. I expect that we'll see more and more about this as time goes on, because it seems to be getting, you know, more attention. I found ourselves fortunate to be able to get some good scientific analysis and somebody who really knows what they're talking about to write for us for the magazine in this particular article. And it's, you know, just another example of proactively taking something that is more or less a natural ingredient or natural amendment, and just basically trading out a little bit of physical effort and time in exchange, instead of just buying a fertilizer product and dumping it in the soil. This is something a lot more natural and probably more beneficial and a lot less costly than going out and buying something manufactured, so to speak.
Is it something that you can't, I know you talk about mainly in the fall trying to get it in before the ground gets hard, but is this something, let's just say, you don't get around to it this year, and then, you know, is it something that when you start to amend the soil in the spring when it thaws out, you're getting ready to plant your spring or late spring summer garden, your tomatoes, corn, things like that, is it feasible to do it then as well?
Yeah, I think at lower levels, so you're not over. I think a lot of times people don't. They think a little. If a little bit's good, then a lot more is much better, and that's not really the case. I mean, it's really a matter of measuring, getting a soil test, and checking for pH, especially soil acidity, and it really, it's the kind of thing, because it is a natural element, starting out with a small amount is not going to hurt anything. One of the procedures would be to do a pH test, and with acidic soils, a little bit of limestone and the smallest amount of rock dust or rock flour, which would be, like I said, a pound and a quarter, 1 1/4 pounds per square yard, roughly, would be the would be a good mixture to add together with you know, the limestone and the rock flour added together to turn acidic soil into a, more of a neutral soil. And this can be done, you know, this can be done really any time of the year. It's not going to hurt anything. Obviously, it's hard to do it when you're trying to grow a garden in there, but some people leave their garden beds, maybe a portion of their growing areas, let them lie fallow for a year. In other words, they'll work a section of the garden, let the other section rest, and then can rotate the
okay.
areas, and that's fine. But prior to planting, putting a little bit of rock flour and the and possibly mixing it with some limestone, it's not going to hurt anything. Of course, if you want a more acidic soil for certain types of crops, the limestone may not be the mm-hmm. best thing to add, but the dust will still impart some benefit to the soil over time. But again, it's the process of not just the stone being in there, but the process of the stone breaking down and interacting with water and the roots of the plants and the actual growing process that really really encourages the uptake of the minerals the plants need for agricultural growth.
Yeah. It's called flour, so I'm guessing it's very fine, but I guess it's fine enough for you could put it in one of your, like I've got a spreader that's behind my tractor that, I don't know, probably holds 500 pounds of whatever, fertilizer, 10-10-10 or whatever the case, but chicken manure or whatever. I'm guessing this is fine enough where, if I had some delivered, somebody had some delivered, they could just scoop it into their spreader behind, three-point hitch spreader and go to town on their garden with that. Spread it, I guess. It's a powdery enough substance that you could do that.
Yeah, it's it is a dust. I mean, ideally it's a dust, and that when you buy it commercially, the azomite there's a company called Rock Dust Local that sells it, and under the names of Bricks Blend and Ruby Mountain Rock, and a few other places. I mean, I just did a little internet searches and. It comes up. That is going to be sort of already prepared and dried, and dry enough, and that would certainly go through a spreader. I mean, I imagine it would probably fit it even in a little, very small type of cart spreader that you'd push. I mean, I'm sure you can adjust them down to low enough level, and of course it would need to be fairly dried for that. And you can get the granules. Certainly granules will go through the spreader as easily, but when you get it from the quarry, it's what you're going to have to accept is the fact that a lot of that's going to be pea-sized gravel, larger, or a mixture of pieces that are too big to go through the machine. And then what you'll really have to work for is just possibly sift yourself post-purchase, after you purchase it, sifting it yourself and separating out the larger chunks and just using the dust. You could incorporate some of the smaller chunks into your, if you were hand spreading it, into your soil. But when you get into the pea gravel size and anything bigger, it's going to be, it's a little bit big for the break down. So you're going to be actually amending it with pebbles, which may not be the best thing. I don't mean from a standpoint of hurting anything. It's just sort of hard to work around in the garden. Hard to work around a lot of rocks in there. But yeah, ideally, if you're done, it's what you want.
Even if you don't have a huge, we've got an acre garden, but if you piddle around the house or have a small little backyard garden or something, then you can get your scoop delivered or whatever, and then again, add a couple of trowels full to a potted plant, or mixing it in when you're planting a shrub or a bush or something like that, using it like strictly as a soil amendment, like Nature's Helper down here in the South, it's real popular.
You buy that, you know, what is it, 3-cubic-foot bag or something like that. It's called Nature's Helper. Law, for years, landscapers, that was just like their secret whenever they were planning something. And a good soil amendment. And so just, you know, you could have this on hand. Take, like you said, maybe take a few big 5-gallon buckets to wherever they're loading it up, work out that special deal. Come back, keep it in a little barn or your shed, and add a few trials here or there when you're replanting or transplanting or what have you. So it sounds like the bottom line is that you're just, you know, you're using that not only as an amendment, but basically, like you said, to get those minerals out of the stone itself that have been there for thousands of years, and trying to get the plant to utilize those minerals, uptake through the root, and get it from there. Maybe a more natural source than, say, using a chemical fertilizer or a Miracle-Gro or something like that. And so is there, I was trying to think, based on adding this rock flour specifically for, you know, mineral uptake, I was trying to think if there was a product that this would replace that we could tell our listeners, you know, like, you know, if you're using this, this may be a more natural alternative to using that, but I couldn't think of anything unless it was just some type of chemical product that's out there that is specifically for, say, vitamins or, you know, minerals specifically. Would using this, I know you got to do soil tests and things like that to see where you're at. You talked about acid soil versus alkaline soil. Is there any mention in the article about using this where it could possibly reduce the amount of fertilizer that you would need, where it would make, if you have a bigger operation, could save you some money in the long run, because this might be cheaper than a mineral spray if you're spraying with a liquid mineral, or maybe a little bit less fertilizer per acre if you actually use this and amend the soil. Is there any information in the article about that?
Not in the article. I've been actually scanning it while you're speaking. You know, essentially what it's going to replace commercial products that are containing, you know, the NPK measures, you know, the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. However, you won't really know what you're getting until you do the soil test. You know, what you're getting out of it. So it's really not a thing where we're saying with the commercial fertilizers, you do a soil test and you say, great, you're lacking, you've got. Lacking nitrogen, and you're okay with phosphorus, but your potassium's low as well. So we can purchase a fertilizer that is manufactured to feed the nitrogen and the potassium at higher levels, and leave the phosphorus alone. But with the rock flour, we don't have that luxury. So what we're doing is you let yourself go for a year, and then you test beforehand. And then you can test after a year, and then you can see where you are and just adjust your feeding of the rock flour as needed. If you're going in the right direction and you're making improvements, which is what's supposed to happen, then you can just continue to just use the rock dust. Or if you need to feed more, you know, if you're still low on nitrogen or whatever, if people are going to go to their commercial fertilizers, they can make their amendments with that as necessary. But basically, the improvements owing to the rock flour are going to be noticeable over a longer time. In other words, they'll be that these. It's not going to happen immediately. It's going to take a season or more to actually see what, you know, where you're going with it. You know, the application, just to get back to the applications, it is sort of a wet, I mean, it's going to be wetter than, you know, than people are normally used to work with. So you may need, if you're not using just a, you know, just a manual application with a wheelbarrow and a shovel or you know, however else you might do it, a wet lime spreader would work as far as that. Mm-hmm. And anything with an agitator that, you know, that allows the stuff to be sort of suspended or so it can be spread, that would be okay too. And it's also used in a sprayer. You know, as long as you have a mechanism to keep to keep stuff in suspension. You can also spray it if it's fine enough. Put it through a sprayer.
Uh-huh.
So some people, I see some notes here, some people use manure spreaders, you know, on a larger scale, obviously. So, you know, that's obviously a real wet, you know, it's a wet application. So you can use a manure spreader if you've actually got a tractor with a, if you've got more acreage with a spreader behind it. Yeah, but this is still, you know, it's still in flux. I mean, the whole idea, but the other part of this is that it's not going to create immediate problems if you over or underdo it. I mean, it's being a natural amendment, it's not going to really, you know, kill anything immediately. So you know,
I guess if you're using, depending on how fine it was, you're talking about even being able to spray it. I guess if you could find some that wasn't so fine that possibly, I don't have the problem now. I moved to South Georgia, and our garden is literally, at least half of it literally is like standing on the beach in Florida, and the other half is more of a clay soil. But when we were up in the Atlanta area, and it was just pure clay, and even if we tilled it 10, 12 inches deep, and every year added peat moss and all kinds of organic material, the next year you couldn't use a front-time tiller. It would just beat you to death. It got, no matter how much stuff we added from the chicken compost, everything, it was horrible. So I didn't know if, you know, being almost like a sand or even larger than that, I guess depending on what kind you want, may have the ability to, if you have a very clay soil, to be able to break it up a little bit as well, along with some organic material and whatnot. Richard, I've got to go to a commercial break here. Folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. You can find them online, backhomemagazine.com. And today we're talking about rock flower. I'll be honest, hadn't heard about this before. I looked it up. I spelled flower like the plant, rock flower, and found out there is a flower out there nicknamed the rock flower, but not that kind of flower, like a biscuit flower. It's just basically rock that is just very, very fine, and you can add it to your garden, and so your plants can benefit from the trace minerals and the minerals that are in this. So very, very, very interesting, and there will be more to come after this. I also wanted to share, Richard mentioned that some people spread this in a manure spreader. Well, I do have some factual information for you here based on that. I didn't know if you knew this, but manure spreader companies that out there that manufacture these manure spreaders, they're the only companies that unfortunately do not stand behind their product when you purchase it. Okay, so yeah, that's factual information. You heard it here first. Manure spreader companies, you know, they've been in business for a while, but they do not stand behind their product. So I know. All right, folks, we'll return after this short break if you can handle any more jokes.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron.
Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Again, we're talking with Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. You can visit them online, backhomemagazine.com, where you can, of course, subscribe to their great publication. We gave away just last time he was here, we gave away on our Facebook page a year subscription to Back Home Magazine, and we'll be set to do that again in November. So you don't have to wait. Very affordable, chock full of information. You can even order one specific magazine if you would like from their long inventory of 20 years of doing the publication. You can order every single one they've ever printed if you want to, or you can just give them a call and say, hey, Chicken Whisperer said I need to subscribe to your publication and do it and get it done, and I'm sure. You love it when Richard's on twice a month. You love the topics he brings to us and educates us on. This is a typical one right now. And 10 times that is in the magazines every single month. So go check them out, backhomemagazine.com. All righty, Richard, any more information you'd like to share with the rock flower?
Yeah, actually you were talking about soil, building soil or, you know, different types of soil, I guess, we were consistency. I guess it's important to note that, you know, the rock flour or gravel dust or rock dust or whatever you want to call it, contains about 70 minerals and trace elements that are beneficial. But it by itself, I mean, physically it by itself will help retain water, but beyond the chemical and nutrient qualities of it. But it's important that people realize it's not just the addition of the rock flour, but to build soil correctly, you'll need to be adding compost and other organic matter, of course, and humus and all the other kind of things that soil building is part of. So that's, you know, the rock flour in itself is not going to be able to convert your Georgia clay into, you know, beautiful, rich, dark, you know, Mississippi earth, you know, but you know, it helps. I mean, it does help because the physical construction of it does help absorb water. And the other thing is building compost with rock dust, you know, not just applying it directly to the soil with other things, but actually including it in your compost pile is a great way to include those minerals early on into your compost. So, you know, you're sort of speeding up the process. As I said it before, it's normally a good year's worth of working before it really shows its benefits. But you know, in a four by four by whatever tall or 3x3 compost pile, just a handful or two of the gravel dust in addition to the other, you know, the soil you put in and the other kitchen waste and all that kind of thing and chicken manures and poultry manures and such, it'll work by itself in with the composting process to help break down everything and include the nutrients into the compost. So it's a, you know, you can be doing that immediately and letting it be working as it is. And the other thing, I didn't really talk about the, you know, some of the studies. There's a number of studies that have been done with the results. This is one particular study in Michigan. Their product was a rock flour made from glacial moraine dust, which is, you know, pretty common up in that area where the glaciers move from north to south and left their trails. This was done in Michigan. The crop was a grain crop. There was a 28% increase in protein in the product, 60% more magnesium and 47% higher calcium content. So it's obviously a very beneficial in that particular study, very beneficial results from the remineralization, which is the word frequently used when you're talking about this rock, basically feeding the soil the minerals. The A to Z mix of minerals and the soil will work with whatever it needs to help, you know, help build itself into a, you know, a proper nutrient-bearing soil. The author herself, she hadn't completed her, actually a little complaining in the article about not having the right instruments or the refractometer needed to do the proper testing, but she just said just an eyeball test about a year after she did the remineralization rock flour program in her garden. It was obvious that the plants had an increased vigor and they were more productive. So just, you know, by the seat of the pants, it was obvious to her that not having done anything else, that that she felt that she had done her soil a favor in her little, you know, yeah, little backyard garden.
Right. Very cool. The other thing I was going to talk about regarding this, you had talked about the, you know, many different kinds, and will it be on the label when you buy it, when they create this and then bag it and sell it, will they create on the back of the bag what mineral content is in, since there are many different kinds, different places around the country and different companies that are producing this, on the back, would there be like a nutrition sheet, like if you're buying something to consume, like this has so much sodium or so much, you know, the different minerals that are in there, or is it just, hey, you know, this is mainly coming from this rock we have in our quarry and we're grinding it up here, take it and whatever, or do some of the more, again, maybe there's kind of an upscale company that does this, that has their product in 50-pound bags or 25, 10-pound bags in these garden centers and in the urban areas, and on the back it says this contains this much, whatever it is, phosphorus and organic, you know, all the stuff in it, or is it just pretty much take it and go and do a soil test on your own later?
No, the commercial products do have a label that's very similar to regular labels, so people can compare apples to apples. So basically, I'm just looking at one right now. It'll have the soluble potash content, the calcium content, you know, magnesium, and so forth, as a percentage. And it'll have some explanation. I don't know if every company does this, but it probably has an explanation of the kind of rock it was sourced from, and the fineness of the particles. And there's a 200. There's a lot of technical stuff. There's a 200. The 200 number screen that has to go through before to get the dust, the correct, you know, the correct size of particle, moisture content, you know, all that stuff. So yes, that is on the label. So it's not like you're buying a pig in a poke. You know, when you go to your local quarry, of course, you're not spending anywhere near as much per pound or per whatever. So you know, you're not going to get that analysis. But I am sure it would be possible. I didn't even think about this, but you could possibly, if your quarry routinely gets its rock product from the same place, which obviously if it's a quarry it will, you could probably take a sample of that to your university or through the university in your state or the the extension service or something and get a source for testing. It might even be done at no cost, and figure out what that product from the quarry is, as far as what it breaks down into, so you know. But other than that, when you buy it, a commercial product like azomite or the Ruby Mountain rock dust or whatever it is you're buying, it'll have a label on it. And something else to mention on there. It's just a readable label that is going to be obvious on the bags. The bags, by the way, that's what I was thinking of. They'll come in like a 25-pound bag and maybe somewhere from a 40 pounds to 50-pound bag of material. So they're mainly in carryable sizes like regular fertilizer products. So they're trying to be marketable. They're trying to fit into the marketplace for people who want to just have the convenience of buying them in the store.
You mentioned earlier too that some people will break it down so fine that they can spray it. If I went out and bought some of this, the thing that immediately came into my mind when you were talking about that was like our worm hotel, our worm bin, where they have all the castings, and then you add a little bit of water to that, and then the castings, you have a spigot, and you get worm tea out of it. And so I was picturing that, but picturing something like a big rubber garbage can, 30-gallon, 50-gallon, whatever it is, and you fill it up with this rock flour, maybe something a little bit more great, a little bit heavier, than, so it's not a dust, but it's actually more like sand or refined sand, and filling that up and then putting a spigot in the bottom and then filling that up with water and then being able to, open that spigot and get that liquid out, that liquid gold, if you will, that we often call the worm tea, and using that as fertilizer, which we've had great success with.
We
can make our own slurry doing that.
Yeah, I would say that in that case you would have to agitate it occasionally at first to make sure that it gets mixed in well before it starts to get absorbed. Because it would normally just settle to the bottom and stay there. But if you agitated your manure tea before you, on a regular basis to make sure it gets mixed up, and you're not going to be able to do it, conveniently. It's not going to be something that you practically can do every day or anything, but just a couple of agitations would probably help to dissipate some of that material. But, when it comes to spraying it, some of the better commercial sprayers, the bigger ones, have agitators in them. So that guarantees that any suspended particles are going to stay in suspension. They're not going to settle to the bottom. So I know it's different. That's different than making the tea, but the point is that they itself needs to be agitated to allow it to dissipate into the mix, so it works well. So, obviously you can't go every day and mix it up, but in the very beginning...
It's not as easy as it sounds, just putting this into a bucket with a spigot on it and adding some water at the top, getting your bonus coming out the bottom. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, but I think if you mixed it up in the beginning when you first put it in, if you made sure to mix it, it would get absorbed pretty well.
Does it have another thing that popped in my mind, because there's a product that also comes from the earth, it comes from ground up rock. It initially came out as a horse stall refresher called Sweet PDZ, and now it's been marketed for chicken owners, put in a smaller like a grated cheese shaker, but it is just Sweet PDZ that's in there. It's kind of a mineral based. So my brain's working a mile a minute. Does this, and maybe no one's done any research, but it could be completely a different process, different stone, what have you. But I wonder if there's any type of maybe not absorption of this product, but kind of like I'm thinking about like perlite, vermiculite, which seems to be totally different than this. But other than the minerals and the elements that the plants can get, are there any benefits to maybe holding more moisture, or because it's rock, it doesn't hold the moisture well, like vermiculite or perlite that you'll see in potting mixes and things like that? I guess that's a twofold question. Any type of
mention about it being absorbent, odor absorbent, or maybe even holding some liquid for absorption, like the other things that may see that in sole additives.
Yeah, I think it depends on the rock it comes from, but basically they are inorganic crystalline structures, and anything that's crystalline like that is going to have some air pockets and stuff. So anytime you have that situation, it's definitely going to be have some ability to retain moisture. And that's why a lot of it is, especially when it's sort of sourced from the quarry, it's gonna be sort of moist and sort of stay, damp. It's gonna stay like that because that's part of the quality of it.
Okay, now that's very, very interesting. You talk about this new stuff. I've got tons of questions and whatnot. Let me switch over here to the chat room, see if we had any questions in there. I think I asked probably most of them. But let me just swing back over here and see if there were any questions in here. Doesn't look like it's pretty light in the chat today. Someone talked about gypsum works well in loosening the soil from compaction. And somebody said that they had weren't sure what rock dust was. They tuned in a little late, but they looked it up on Wikipedia and learned all about it. And just make sure you type in rock flour, like wheat flour or flour you make biscuits out of, not like this crazy dude did, put in from just memory thinking, oh yeah, rock flour, and typing in flour like the plant, because you'll find there are some plants called rock flour. But that's why I wanted to research it more. I'm like, okay, there's got to be something more to this, and then corrected my spelling, and da-da, makes perfect sense now. So, and all this
and
is
rock
in your
dust.
Current article. The current article where they can go, I know you're in a lot of Tractor Supplies and a lot of bookstores and magazine stores if they want to go buy this particular article, if they're more interested in this particular topic that we talked about today. It is in your current on-the-shelf article of Back Home Magazine.
Yeah, the cover has a picture of a big turkey on it, and we also have a great article on rocket stoves, which we'll discuss going forward.
For coming up.
But, so... you mentioned briefly gypsum. Yeah, that was we had done an article some years ago now, but actually grinding up old drywall, as long as it's not it's not been oil painted before it's been painted. A lot of times there's a lot of damaged drywall or at construction sites wallboard that's been damaged before it actually gets installed. Grinding that up in a hammer mill or just a grinding, like a tree shredder, and applying the dust, the resulting dust has proven also beneficial both to retain moisture and to adjust pH levels and all that stuff, and it's, real cheap. Now, of course, we have had in more recent times, drywall from China has been contaminated with whatever I don't know where they get.
Yeah,
all the
I remember that. Yes, a few years back, and houses were having.
Yeah,
golly,
that's,
it really hit
they
me
don't
in
want
the water. It. Just, yep.
Yeah, all that issue, and I don't know whether the point is to put as much of, let's get rid of all this poison and ship it to the U.S. or what, but anyway, that would be important not to to make sure that it was a drywall that was manufactured, in the U.S. and not full of toxins. But, essentially drywall, gypsum is a fine gardening product, and when ground up into small dust, it probably imparts much of the same qualities that the rock flour does, I'm sure.
Someone mentioned the other day about, had a whole list of things that we had gotten from China that was just gone bad, the pet food, the melamine in the pet food, the jerky treats, the sheetrock, like you're saying, it's like, they think, let's see what all, how can we get all this poison and byproduct from our manufacturing, what can we do with this, let's throw it in some sheetrock, let's throw it in some dog treats and ship it to the U.S., let them, deal with it, we won't have to, but yeah, that's a... So many bad things have come from over there. I remember that sheetrock thing. I forgot about it until you mentioned it. It hit hot and heavy down in Florida, and it was right after... Pardon that sneeze. Right after, during the housing boom. And God, that was horrible. I remember that. And I wonder how many people still remember that when they're buying houses that were built in that era. So horrible. What a great topic, Richard. We appreciate you sharing this. And like I said, folks, if you tuned in late, you can listen to the archive show at iTunes.com, podcast.com, Zoom.com, and right here at blogtalkradio.com. And very good information. Today's topic, we're talking about rock flour and what it is and how we can utilize it around the house and the homestead and the farm. Very cool information, many different applications and the benefits for our garden. So very good information, Richard. We thank you very much for coming on. And this information is in his most recent, on the shelves now, publication, Back Home Magazine. So you go out there, and if you see it, you can pick it up. Like I said, it's got a big turkey on the front. And this is the November-December issue?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So then this will be the last issue of the year before you pick up and do the January, February. So, yeah, pick that up, put it on the coffee table. All your guests over the Thanksgiving holiday and Christmas holiday can have some excellent reading material and learn all about homesteading from Richard. Thank you so much. I did get the episodes for the next four and the topics, so we're looking forward to those. That's going to be great. And let me just look here at the Kent, looks like we have you coming on. I think we said last time the 7th. And the 21st, and those don't look like they're anywhere near Thanksgiving, so I think we'll have no problems with those two dates for November. And so that'll look pretty good, so we look forward to you coming back next month. Always a joy to have you on, Richard. We thank you very much.
Okay, we'll see you in a couple of weeks then.
That sounds great. Thank you, buddy. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye. All right, folks, that was Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Visit them online, backhomemagazine.com. Great publication, and hey, you know, you can see it in your local tractor supply store and all Barnes & Noble and places like that. Or you can go to backhomemagazine.com and subscribe to your to that publication. Get a year subscription guaranteed to please. That's going to wrap up another episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. That's also going to wrap up this week's of broadcasting, so you'll just have to count on following us on Facebook and Twitter over the weekend, but we will return this coming Monday with Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. That'll be this Monday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we hope you have a great weekend with family and friends. We'll see you back here 12 p.m. Eastern on Monday. God bless everybody.